Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Do you feel like you're the only young person who cares about your Catholic faith? Do you look around at Mass and only see silver foxes?
We're Jake and Kathy, a young adult married couple, and we're here to tell you, you're not alone.
That's why it's time to get Truth Pops.
You're going to get a podcast designed specifically for you, a young adult Catholic in a pop culture world.
The countdown is on for Truth Pop.
We'll connect Christ into culture.
You know that one scene in The Wizard of Oz when Toto grabs a hold of the curtain, pulls it back, and we see who's really working the levers and the knobs? That's Blaine Barkus to me. He's got a job title that we'll get into in this episode, but in its simplest form, he's one of those guys behind the music, behind the song. And he's been a part of some of the biggest songs in the Christian music genre. Which ones? Here's a couple.
Lord, I need you. Oh, I need you. Every hour I need you. If you got pain, he's a pain taker. If you feel lost, he's a way maker. If you need freedom, a savior, he's a prison-shaking savior. If you got chains, he's a chain breaker. Give me a revelation, show me what to do. Cause I've been trying to find my way.
Everything starts with a great song. If you don't have a great song, you can be the greatest singer in the world. You can have the coolest look in the world. If you don't have a great song, you don't have it.
What else with Corey Mann on the Studio DNA Podcast Network?
Blaine, where does love for music begin for you?
Man, really young. My parents were not musicians, but just huge music fans, pop music fans. So, I mean, I literally have memories of a kid, probably 4 and 5 years old, listening to 45s. My parents' 45s, Beatles.
Help, I need somebody. Help, not just anybody. Help, you know I need someone.
Help. Stuff that was on pop radio. I literally had this battery-powered turntable that I would carry around the house and play my parents' 45s on. My parents love for music. My parents love to dance. They were in this thing called a dance club, and they'd go once a month with friends and dance to pop music. And so, yeah, so really young. And then started playing drums when I was 10 years old in the fifth grade. My elementary school, I went to a public school I grew up in St. Louis, Missouri, and they offered instrumental music for the first time for fifth graders. And the only instrument I thought was cool was the drums that they offered. I didn't want to play strings or horns or anything. So I started playing drums, yeah, when I was 10.
What's a great drum song that made you maybe go, I want to do that?
I was a big fan of the band called The Who when I was in high school. And Keith Moon was an absolute crazy man, person, crazy maniac. But his drumming style was absolute chaos. But it was inspiring and passionate. And as a kid in high school, it absolutely got my attention. So the song Won't Get Fooled Again by The Who is a song that still gives me chills. And just the bombastic thrashing of Keith Moon just inspires me.
When did you first hit the road and have an actual tour under your belt?
Yeah, that was in fall of 2000. I actually left a job in artist management because I wanted to be an A&R, but didn't have a job. I had been a road manager prior to that. So I went back to road managing, but was also able to play drums. And that was for Mr. Mark Schultz. I was actually his first tour manager and drummer in the fall of 2000, really for the whole year, fall of 2000. And then the whole most of 2001 was on the road with Mark. That's when his first album came out. And
great segue into our first email from Mr. Mark Schultz.
Oh, no.
Mark says this of Blaine, a musical renaissance man. Things that just might make Blaine laugh, and he sent two of them.
Do you want me to quote what I think he might say?
That'd be interesting.
Schultz, keep your day job.
That was number one. Second shelf next to the Wheaties, moron.
Next to the Wheat Thins, moron.
Wheat Thins. Now you get to choose which one you'd like to explain.
The story with that is when Mark first moved to Nashville to pursue music, he worked at one of the downtown Nashville hotels in one of the restaurants. You know, he was trying to pursue music. And I guess one of his coworkers was just this really kind of crass guy. And he just would always make fun of Mark. You're no good. So, and you know, Mark would be doing his job and they'd be back in the kitchen or something. And Mark would be singing. And this guy would go, Schultz, keep your day job. And so that, I mean, all on tour, we would quote that all. It's anytime we would want to get on his case, we would just be like, Schultz, keep your day job.
When did you transition from touring musician, tour manager to A&R? Define, if someone's hearing it for the first time, what does A&R actually mean?
I kind of went back and forth. So when I first moved to Nashville to work in music, my first job was as a tour manager. In 96, I was hired as Third Day's first tour manager when their first album had just come out in the summer of 96. Road managed for about 6 months for them, 120 some shows, and then was hired by their management company, Creative Trust, to be their day-to-day manager. And that's what I did for about 3.5 or so years, involved with Third Day and Stephen Curtis and in management, and Schultz. That's how I met Schultz, because they were managing him as well. And then I enjoyed the management side of it, but the musician in me really wanted to be more involved in the creative process. So I really decided that I wanted to find an A&R job. And I, like a dummy, I don't know what I was thinking. I quit my job. I stepped down with my artist management job and didn't have an A&R job lined up yet. So I needed to make a living. So I was like, man, I guess I can go back and road manage. And that's when Schultz was hitting the road. So I stepped back into road management and then just really almost by accident was blessed to be able to play drums with him too. So, but I'd gotten married in the midst of right before going on the road with Schultz and a year of touring. And I just knew that the road life wasn't for me. It wasn't what I wanted to do. And then thankfully in the fall of 2001, an A&R job came open at Word Records and they took a chance on me. My former boss at Creative Trust, a guy named Dan Raines, spoke highly of me to them and recommended they talk to me. And, even though I hadn't exactly done the job of A&R, I had done a lot of those kinds. I had those kind of skills, at least I thought so. And Dan agreed and highly recommended me and they hired me. But A&R stands for, it's a record label industry kind of a job title. It stands for artists and repertoire. Basically, repertoire is songs. So my job is basically, you know, briefly, it's twofold. There are artists that are signed to our label, to any record label, that I'm responsible for overseeing the making of those records and those recordings and really all, you know, creative content. And so, you know, right now I'm probably responsible for 9 or 10 artists that are signed to Provident. Then the other side of my job is talent scouting. I'm looking for new artists to potentially sign to our company. what an A&R person does is hopefully sign and develop artists that can impact culture, that can have an audience on a national, if not worldwide level. I'm not looking for somebody. At the end of the day, I'm judged on signing artists that are successful and that generate revenue for our company, because our company's owned by Sony Music. And Sony Music in New York, they don't care about the message of our music. They don't care about our artists, really. They care about how much money can we send them every year. That's where the tension comes in between, you know, music, ministry, and commerce. It's a pretty messy soup, if you will, sometimes.
Very first project or artist you worked with?
Actually, I think it was Building 429. I think that was the first artist I signed in probably 2000. I don't remember the year now, but I'm pretty sure it was Building. And they had that debut hit, Glory Defined, back in the day. And it was like a gazillion week number one. And I'm pretty sure it was Building, yeah.
Blaine was our A&R guy on the very first record we ever made. It was called The Space in Between Us Record. And we had a producer named Jim Cooper. We were working out of the Sound Kitchen studio. The whole record, I'd written all the songs. Blaine had already approved them. We were off and running. And I happened to knock out another tune that I played for Jim Cooper, our producer at the time. I was like, hey, man, like, what do you think about this? And I played it for him. And Jim's like, oh, wow, I really like that. That's awesome. And he said, I'm going to call Blaine. So he called Blaine. And Blaine came down to the Sound Kitchen. Now, I remember that we were in, I guess maybe the B studio. And I remember Blaine came in, and I walked into like a small side room. So there's only barely enough room for me, Jim, and Blaine to be in one of these side, like, vocal booth room type things. And Jim's like, all right, play the song for him. I'm like, okay, cool. So I like pull out my guitar and, you know, I strum out this song, and it just didn't really go right. I just didn't play it all that great. And I remember I finished it and I was like, no, what? Something's not right. Hang on, Blaine. Let me just play it in a different, and I put it in a different key really quickly, which was a massive mistake, because I started singing the song again and everything was fine in the verse. And then we hit the chorus. I hit the chorus and it was way out of my range. And I will never forget the face that Blaine made as I tried so hard to sing this song that was completely out of my range. It's basically like an American Idol contestant. You know, like one of those moments where where somebody comes up and they start singing something, and like the first thought that goes through your mind is, I got to get out of here. I got to get out of here now. I got to change the channel. I got to run. Like, Blaine had to listen to me sing this horrible chorus. And I remember as soon as we were done, like, Blaine just kind of looked at me and said, that's not done. That's not ready yet. And he was right. It wasn't even close to ready yet. But now, today, there are times when people will sit down and play a song for me and it's like, oh my gosh, I'm going to die. I got to listen to this song. Oh, it's terrible. And I'm like, the thing is, I always remember that Blaine Barkus was kind to me in my moment where I played a horrible, horrible version of a song. I'm sure he's probably thinking, like, I just signed this dude. He can't even play his own songs. But what a great lesson in humility, though, because, like, I've had to sit in and listen to people sing and play their own songs. It's funny, Blaine's probably still heard me play and sing some of my own songs as time went on. Again, but man, we've all had the American Idol moment, and Blaine was kind to me, and I'd be interested to know how many more of those type of moments he's had in his career, because as an A&R guy, there's no way he didn't get through his whole career without having a bunch of those. But I gave him one back in 2003 that was for the books, and I will never forget the face that he made as he tried desperately to not look horrified, even though he was.
Take me inside a weekly meeting with the CEO of the label, and what's being talked about?
In our weekly A&R meeting, there's five other guys at the company that do what I do. There's three of us on the Providence side, and there's two guys on the gospel side. Really, it's us going around the table, so to speak, and updating him on current projects that are in process, updating him on new songs that have come in. Maybe it could be, you know, what are some fires that are burning that need his input or need his help on? Conflicts, interpersonal conflicts, or manager conflicts, or there could be a financial discussion on, okay, hey, you know what, we only have this much budgeted for these recordings, but we want to work with this producer and it's going to cost this much. Are you cool with us spending a little bit more with this producer for this artist? Yeah, a lot of it is music and song related. It's kind of a microcosm of what the job is. It's kind of this business meets music meets creative. You know, you're kind of using both sides of the brain a little bit, if that makes any sense. So it's really a fun meeting usually. I mean, not always fun because there's hard things to talk about. But I mean, sometimes we're talking about letting an artist go, dropping an artist from the label, you know, that we've walked down the road for a while with them. We've tried some songs at radio. It hasn't worked. It hasn't connected. We're X number of dollars in debt on this artist, and we don't see a positive trajectory right now. And we just have to make the hard decision to, and usually a lot of times it's the A&R person going, no, just give me one more shot. Just give us one more shot. I'm not ready to quit yet. You know, I got to figure this out, because really as the A&R person, you probably have the closest relationship at the label with that artist. You know, you probably signed them originally. You have a personal, and you don't have the only personal relationship with the artist, but you're pretty close to them, you know, and sometimes it's really hard to disengage your emotions personally for the artist, you know, to make that decision to go, hey man, I'm sorry. And it's just, we're gonna have to part ways. I've been doing this, you know, obviously quite a while. And sometimes you just see the signs on the wall and you know it's time. Even though you love the person, you just don't see the signs that it's going to turn around. And that's where the tension comes in, as I was saying earlier about, you know, the financial part of it has to be considered. We are a for-profit company, and that's how I'm judged in my job. I am evaluated in my job by signing artists that make a positive financial impact for the company. At the end of the day, that's how I keep my job and how I stay employed. That really stinks sometimes because I want to just keep going. But some artists, you just know, you know what? Sometimes you don't know on the front end when you sign a new artist, you don't fully know what you're getting into. You know, I think this person has an amazing voice, great heart, great person. Doesn't always happen. Sometimes they get in the room and you go down the road for a few months and you're like, I just don't think they can write songs, you know? And sometimes that happens. Or they do write great songs and it just still doesn't work. You know, you send it to radio and either it doesn't get played at all, or it gets played and listeners don't like it. It doesn't test well and it just doesn't work. And we could all be, you know, the label can, we've had situations where the label's all high fighting before we put a song out. This is going to be a smash. And it's just like, it's crickets. It is crickets. And there's so many factors that play into that. Timing of the release, the song, I mean, tons of factors. So
when you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment your work stress disappears as you kayak through the canyons. Or the moment you discover the life-changing effects of prickly pear chocolate. But nothing beats the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the very first time. Visit a new state of mind. Learn more at hereyouareaz.com.
One of my favorite online moments of 2020 was watching this young man in your front yard celebrating.
Blaine is the only person I know that can tell me no about something, and by the end of the conversation, I'm completely on his side. He's one of the most reasonable, logical guys I know. In the dictionary somewhere next to level-headed is a picture of Blaine sitting behind a drum set with frosted tips. Okay, maybe not frosted tips, but I know I can always go to Blaine with anything. Creating is like a really vulnerable thing, and I can always count on Blaine for honesty and a safe place to share an opinion or a song. Blaine's a hard worker, he loves his family well, and it's evident on both accounts. I consider him a dear friend. But really, we all had frosted tips, Blaine. It was a phase, and we're past it.
That kid is crazy.
Congratulations, by the way, on a number one song.
Yeah, Kane, they're special people, man. They're just obviously crazy talented, but they're just, I tell people all the time, I want my kids to turn out just like those kids. Well-rounded, respectful, God-loving, not naive to the world. They're just great, well-rounded kids, you know, and it's just an honor to work with them. They're awesome.
A story about Blaine Barkus. If I'm not mistaken, we gave him his very first job in Nashville. He was our tour manager, which maybe sounds like an exciting thing, but I'm sure was not so exciting at the time. Him starting out with this brand new band who was very green and didn't know what they were doing in a van and a trailer driving across the country. Herding cats is probably the main job he had, but trying to keep us all together. But Blaine has been an amazing friend through many, many years. And not only did we give him his first job as our tour manager, but then he, of course, proved how smart and how great he is. He moved on to manage the management company and was a day-to-day guy for us for a long time. Then he followed his passion into music, into A&Ring, went to Word, and then eventually ended up coming back to working with us as when he took his job at Provident. And so we've worked with him in different ways through many, many different years, but I'll say above and beyond him being a smart guy and really great at what he does in management and A&R, most of all, just a man with an amazing heart that really steered us in the early days and even in the later days, really, in always reminding us of who we are and what we're doing and who we're doing it for. And Blaine, I love you, buddy, and so thankful that you've been in my life in many different aspects and many different ways, and so thankful for your friendship. And Corey, you're not so bad yourself.
Man, dude, those words mean a whole lot to me. Those guys have a special place in my heart. So part of my story is when I moved to Nashville in 96, I had just been divorced. I was about 30, 31 years old, and just with a dream of wanting to work. I wanted to work in Christian music. So when I moved here, I didn't have a job. I just started meeting people, and thankfully Creative Trust gave me the shot to tour manage those guys. And being on the road with them was really healing for me, just personally. I mean, not only was it a great job and a fun job, but it was just on a spiritual, personal level. It was incredibly healing for me because I was still hurting from being divorced. I was still recovering. And man, to get to go on the road and just see the country and be a part of great music and be a part of something that was that I thought God was doing, and to be around those guys. I mean, those five guys were just awesome guys. And those times in the bus, those times in the van, I mean, I've said it to them before, I've told them, I mean, they're like my younger brothers, you know? And so whether they knew it or not, they were ministering to me in a really hard time for me.
According to your resume, regularly critiqued and advised on Third Day's live performance. I would love a job like that, to watch a show and tighten the screws, so to speak. What were those conversations like?
Those conversations probably happened less and less often as their career progressed. It's one of the things I loved about working with those guys is because we had the history on the road. I mean, the thing about being on the road with people, I call touring the traveling fraternity house. Now, don't take that too much the wrong way, but I was in a fraternity in college, and when you're in a fraternity, you spend a really intense amount of time with people because you live with people, and when you're with people 24/7. That even aren't your family, you become close to them because you live life with them. They see the good, bad, and the ugly. Well, touring is very much the same, because when you're cooped up in a tour bus or a van with people, there's no hiding. You're with them all the time. They see the good, bad, and the ugly. So because I built that history with the guys by being on the road with them, I think there was a certain level of hopefully trust and rapport, you know, that I could say some hard things. And I love artists, but their creativity, you know, Logan Cain mentioned it. It's vulnerable. Writing songs is vulnerable. Performing is vulnerable. And so to receive constructive criticism is not always fun, you know, but I'm pretty, hopefully speak the truth in love is my mantra. A lot of times after shows, I would walk into the dressing room after a Third Day show, and usually it would be Ty Anderson. He'd go, okay, Blaine, they called it the Blaine-o-meter. It was called the Blaine-o-meter. So give us a grade on the show, Blaine. What's the Blaine-o-meter? You know, I was pretty straightforward on what I thought. And then I would try to give some specific things. I will say this though, to me, Mac Powell, one of the best frontmans in any genre of music. I mean, I just think he's one of the best frontmans in any genre in music. I just think he's that good. They just had this chemistry. There's five guys that just had great chemistry because they grew up friends and they were just fun to watch.
I'll never forget when I first started doing this music thing, I'd put out an EP and got featured on like some indie website as the artist of the month. And I'll never forget, I got an email from Blaine Barkus, and it had a Sony Music address to the email. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is it. Like, this is, here we go. I was like, babe, here we go, yelling through the house. And he asked me to come meet him at his office. And so I went and I met him at his office, and he asked me everything I was getting into, and you know, I had any dates or writing any new music, and you know, I told him everything, probably embellished most of it because I had nothing going on. And then Blaine looked at me and said, "All right, nice meeting you. Keep writing. And I was like, what? Like, this is it? Like, we're done? And in my head, I was like, I'm getting signed. I'm going to start tour next day, like tomorrow. But he said, just keep writing. And then he sent me an email and followed up and was like, hey, I really think you should write with this person. Would you be open to writing with this person? And he set up a few writes for me that I would then send the demo back to him of the song that I wrote. And out of the first batch of writers he got me to write with, I wrote Come to the River and When Mercy Found Me, which was the song that got nominated for a Grammy that jump-started my career. And now I get the privilege of working alongside Blaine Barkus still to this day.
Good old Rhett. He's exactly right. Yeah, there was, I don't remember the name of the indie site, website. Yeah, it was some kind of indie Christian music site. And they would send out a monthly feature. And most of the time, honestly, it was like, oh, this is not very good. One day, I just pushed play, and I heard Rhett's voice. And I was like, oh, okay, that's getting my attention. Songs were good, but the voice was getting my attention for sure. And that's a pretty typical scenario. It happens quite often. In fact, I'm in the middle of one right now where I'll meet somebody, I'll find an artist, and I think, okay, there's something here. I'm not ready to sign this person yet, but I got to walk down the road here a little bit and dig a little deeper.
Do you have to ask permission, or do you have, because of the title you have, I can sign them right now if I want, and it's go time? Or is there an enormous amount of boxes to be checked?
It's kind of somewhere in the middle. It's not an enormous amount of boxes, but I definitely run it by, you know, Terry Hemmings, our CEO and our boss. He has great ears. He's been doing this a long time, even longer than I have. And so I definitely want his input, and I want his buy-in, because first of all, like I said, I do trust his ears. I do trust his gut, and I get input from the other A&R people that are on our team too. Usually if I have Terry on board, I'm good to go. I have played the card a few times where I've said to Terry, where he doesn't get it. And I'm like, look, man, I'm just asking you. I think I've earned the right here to just have a shot here. You may not fully agree with me, but I need you to let me do this.
How'd that turn out?
Didn't turn out well. There's one or two I'm thinking of, and neither one worked. Again, that's not to say he's always right. He's not, but he does have a good gut. So there's not a lot of hoops to jump through. Sometimes I'll get input from marketing on a song or two before I sign somebody, but we don't operate. We're a very A&R driven company. You know, everything starts with the music. As much as changed in the last 20 plus years, what hasn't changed is everything starts with a great song. If you don't have a great song, you can be the greatest singer in the world. You can have the coolest look in the world. If you don't have a great song, you don't have it.
What advice do you give the young 20-something worship leader?
Are you writing original songs? And are you writing great original songs? Based on what I just said, you know, everything starts with a great song. Songwriting is really, really hard to do. Great songwriting is really, really hard. And this may not be a fair comparison, but it popped into my head, so I'm going to share it. You know, I mean, we've seen the reality shows over the years, the American Idols, The Voice, those kinds of shows. And to me, what those shows reflect is there are a lot of great singers out there, a lot of great people that can really sing. But that alone does not make you an artist. That alone does not mean you can have a national platform and career in music. The reason they're even compelling on those shows is they are singing great songs. I just can't harp on that enough. It's about songs first. Again, you can be a great worship leader and be valuable to your church, but you may not be. That doesn't mean you can make the next step. Doesn't mean you can't, but it doesn't mean you can.
Blaine Barkus is by far one of my most favorite human beings that I've gotten to know through the process of making music with a record label. But he's more than that. He's become a dear brother and dear friend. I've known Blaine for 15 years. As an A&R guy, I think one of the things I've always loved about him is his passion for music that comes from a very real place. Blaine's never struck me as a guy who chases fads. I think it's given by the fact that he has a real soft spot for anyone who loves rock and roll, particularly artists. His instincts are fantastic, except occasionally, there's been a couple times, and one time, this is pretty funny, I had written a song that was recorded by some other artists. In 2011, I put out my third Provident album. It was we had finished making this album. It was called 11 Between. All the songs were recorded, but I really felt like there was one song missing, and it was this song that I'd written that had already been recorded by some other folks. It was a little song called Lord, I Need You. And I had to talk the label into letting me record the song. And then even after that, it didn't end up going on the record. But Blaine was one of the people who said, ah, it's okay, you don't need it. That song ended up being on All the People Said Amen. But I always like giving Blaine a hard time for cutting Lord, I Need You off that record. But then also, I commend him for his humility as a leader in wanting to have it on All the People Said Amen. So can't say enough about him. He's a great guy.
Oh, man. Love that guy. Great example there of, dude, I'm not always right. In fact, I'm often wrong. You know, some of that, you know, not trying to bail myself out of it, but some of that was the timing of when the song came in. We were kind of already really well into recording the record. We'd kind of already locked the songs in. The budget was set and the deadline. We're down, you know, we're 80% down the road. And I think I was just kind of like, all right, I just want to get this done. You know, the business side of me was like, let's just get, oh no, it's distracting, you know, which, man, so many times in the, over the history of music, you would find these examples of great songs written at the 11th hour, written at the last minute, over and over again. Third Day, the Revelation album, Revelation and song Revelation and the two hits, the two biggest hits off that record were written after 90% of the record was done. We just kept going, man, you got anything else, Mac? You got anything else? And so the example with Matt was just like, man, I was like, okay, yeah, that's a nice ditty. That's a good worship song. Yeah, okay, that's great. And he just kept pressing me on it. And then he's wrong in the fact that we didn't go record it and not put it on the record. We just didn't record it at that moment. And then when we were getting ready for All the People Said Amen, he was like, dude, Lord, I need you. I was like, okay, you're right. Let's go do it. So, yeah, man, I'm not always right. That's for sure.
Hey guys, what's going on? It's Zach. Hey, I got a quick Blaine story that I wanted to share with you. I would say not long after we started working on my first record, I was trying to write songs for my record, and me and Blaine and Jonathan Smith and my manager Ryan Rettler were all at a Chick-fil-A one day, and I remember standing in line, and Blaine kind of reached over and he said, "Hey man, I've got an idea for a song if you guys are looking for a title to write." And I was like, "Well man, go for it." He said, "Yeah, I'll take my son to this place every day for baseball practice." And he said, "There's a sign painted on the wall that says, Fear is a Liar." And he said, "I think that'd be a pretty cool title. What do you think?" And I was like, "Man, that would be great." And long story short, Blaine had no idea the season that I was going through or you know, what I was struggling with. But I think for myself as a new Christian artist, just trying to figure out where I fit into all of this, I was dealing with a lot of fear and a lot of anxiety. So that became an anthem for me, especially as a new artist, and something that I could really just sing every night when I was on stage and feeling that fear. So I remember when we wrote it, Blaine kind of laughed and he said, "So do I get a percentage of that song now since I had the title?" And I was like, "No." But anyway, Blaine, love you, buddy. Thanks for all you do.
Zach Williams, that's panned out pretty well.
So, love Zach so much. What a talent. I'm sure you know his story, and a lot of your listeners know his story, but just that's an interesting example of a guy who, you know, really developed. When I first met Zach, he was not a typical new artist because he was a little bit older. He was, you know, his mid-30s, and he had had all these years on the road with his Southern rock band, you know, playing clubs and kind of leading this crazy lifestyle. So the story is Jonathan Smith, who produces all of Zach's stuff and his main co-writer. Jonathan is from Jonesboro, Arkansas, which is Zach's hometown. And Jonathan and his wife happened to be home for Christmas one year and went to Christmas Eve service. And that was the church where Jonathan's wife grew up in. And Zach stepped up to the microphone on Christmas Eve and started singing. And Jonathan was like, "Whoa, who in the world is this guy?" And obviously beelined up to him and got to meet him and said, "Man, you got to come to Nashville. Let's write. What's your story?" And so they started writing songs, and you know, the publishing part of our company is right by my office in the building at Provident. And I started overhearing some of the demos of the songs they were writing. And when I heard Zach's voice, I was like, "Whoa, whoa, 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 whoa. What is that? I want to know who that is." And so, yeah, that's how we met. And it's been just a pleasure to work with him. He's just, again, not really a typical new artist, because he walks in already a very high level of songwriting ability, a tons of stage experience, live experience, confidence, maturity, all those things. And I would say a similar thing about Kane. You know, Kane was not a typical brand new artist, because they had kind of tried their hand at country for a number of years here in Nashville, and just didn't feel like it was a fit for them, and just felt awkward. But yet all they were doing over those years with the country radio tours and some of the, you know, the horrible live shows they had to play and all that stuff, and being in a van and driving around, all that experience is valuable, and it's training. It's just like a sport. It's training, it's coaching, it's experience, it's repetitions. That all adds up and has value for an artist.
What are you most excited about on the front end as we record this in 2021?
What I still love year after year, not just this year, about my job that hasn't ever changed, is developing and signing new artists and trying to help them find their way. That is the most exciting and rewarding thing for me, and what still gets me excited when an artist is just still wide-eyed and excited and gets the opportunity to do this, and helping them creatively, spiritually, personally find their way to getting to do it, is still the biggest thrill for me and the biggest honor.
Blaine, thank you so much. You know, most people don't want to know how the sausage is made, but you pulled back the curtain quite a bit there, so I appreciate that.
Absolutely, man. No, I have a lot of, I know we don't know each other well, but I've admired you from afar and appreciate, even though I don't know you well, I can see by what you say that you love artists and you love music. And so I appreciate that about you, and appreciate your passion for a wide variety of music. And so thank you for championing what we do and championing our artists.
Leave some feedback, write a review, hit the subscribe button so you never miss a new episode. What else with Corey Mann on the Studio DNA Podcast Network. Original music by Chris August, used by permission. Waiting on a tax return? Hopefully it ends up in your hands. Fraudulent tax returns due to identity theft increased by 30% in 2023. If you're in a bind this tax season, LifeLock can help. Our U.S.-based restoration specialists are experts dedicated to helping solve your identity theft issues. And all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package. So we'll reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. Help protect your information this tax season with LifeLock. Save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/aware.